Good afternoon. The House Resources Committee is called to order at 1:01 p.m. on Friday, February 3rd. We are meeting in Capitol Room 124. I'd like to welcome Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, Representative Armstrong, Representative Dibert, and myself, Representative McKay. The other representatives have been excused. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to do business. Do we have anybody else? I'd like to recognize Commissioner Boyle in the audience and Mary Jackson, staff for Representative Sadler. Okay, I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Justin, and Zach, for helping keep everything in order today. You didn't fill it in. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. We have one item on the agenda today, an update from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. A reminder to members, we will pause for questions before changing slides. Here with us today is Director Christy Collis from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. We have other folks on the line from the DNR that are available for questions. Director Collis, welcome to House Resources. Please state your name for the record. Come up to the table and begin your presentation, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, this is Christy Collis. I am the Division of Mining, Land, and Water Director. And with me, I also have Commissioner Boyle.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair McCabe. This is Commissioner Designee John Boyle for the record. And I always feel a little guilty if I just make some of my folks sit up here by themselves. So I thought I would sit here this afternoon and actually sing Director Collis's praises. You know, she's leads, you know, one of the more critical divisions for the Department of Natural Resources. The Division of Mining, Land, and Water has a very broad remit to manage, you know, the state's 100 million acres of state lands, and in addition, the 65 million acres of submerged lands that the state also manages, along with our, you know, 35,000 miles or so of coastline. So it's an incredibly, you know, broad remit. A lot of what goes on in DMLNW includes, you know, dam safety, includes, you know, asserting the state's rights and ownership rights of our navigable rivers, which is an issue that I know is of concern to a number of members on this committee. And, you know, the folks that we have within the division are consummate professionals. These are dedicated people that really work hard every day to, you know, serve the people of Alaska. A lot of, you know, permits that are needed to traverse state lands, to lay out a set net along the coast, to mariculture operations, you know, so on and so forth. You know, that has to go through the division. So these guys work really hard to be responsive for the needs of the state and to, you know, look out for the state's best interests. And Christy has been leading the division now officially for about the past month, and you know, before that was gracious enough to serve in an acting capacity for a period of time. And she has worked her way up through the ranks, so to speak, started, I think, front desk at the division, and has now, you know, risen all the way to be division director. So she has an incredible amount of institutional knowledge of how the division works, and is, you know, a very capable and probably even beloved manager to the folks that you know, report up to her. So we're really proud to have her on board, and she can help lead us through the discussion today as we talk about the division.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Boyle, and thank you, Christy, for your hard work at the department.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me to present today. I am going to do a brief DMLW overview, and then I'll also go into more detail on our state entitlement selection process, as well as our mining section and what we have going on for mining projects across the state. I'll do my best to answer questions, of course, but that's why I have some subject matter experts online for anything that I'm not able to answer. So the mission statement, this is really important for us to highlight, is to provide for the appropriate use and management of Alaska's state-owned land and water, aiming toward maximum use consistent with the public interest. There's a lot to unpack there, but that's where we have the balancing act of authorizing the use of state lands, but also ensuring that the public has access to utilize those state lands for hunting and fishing, and whatever recreation purposes they might want to utilize state lands for. So as the commissioner stated, we do manage over 100 million acres of state land, and about 65 million acres of tide and submerged lands. It's very diverse what we do, and we are one of the seven divisions within the department. The division is responsible for managing such a wide variety of programs, as the commissioner stated. They range from commercial use, conveyance of land for to private individuals. We also acquire land on behalf of other entities, such as the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. We recently acquired a parcel for them for the Veteran Cemetery up towards Fairbanks, and so we assisted them with that process, which I think is a really exciting project that we hope to see actually come to fruition and development. We also do stewardship. As I mentioned, if there's any kind of blockage or access issues, we work through those. And then surveying, that's another one. We have a whole group of surveyors that I'll give a little more detail on. And then we also have our land planning section that does classifications of state land. So this is a very boiled down version of our organization chart. If I was to put up the organization chart of the division up, it would be hard to read, because there's approximately about 240 staff when you look at how many full-time, long-term, and student interns we have within the division. And it's to do all this great work because there's many programs that we administer. So for myself as director, I oversee two deputies. So I have Chris Hess, who is the working title of deputy director. And then I have a vacancy right now for the chief of operations. Then under me is also the administrative support services. So they do our budgeting, capital, and operating budget, as well as any personnel issues. We have our water resources and dam safety section. They manage and authorize the beneficial use of water in Alaska, regardless of land ownership, consistent with the public interest. So you might hear of temporary water use authorizations or any of our water rights and stream flow reservations. Our dam safety group, they protect the public safety by regulating construction and maintenance of state jurisdictional dams across the state. And there's only two of them, so it's pretty impressive. And then we have our mining section. So mining, they take in all the mining claims, exploration permits, large mines, coal leases, and they also work to clean up some of the abandoned mines across the state. So I'll go into more detail, of course, on our mining section later in the presentation. The deputy oversees what we call more of our support services sections. So appraisals, they do the fair market value assessment for parcels that we're either going to be selling or acquiring. We always have to have that fair market value on those lands before we can dispose of or bring those lands in. Then we have our survey section. They do the accurate boundaries for land conveyed and received. They're also the platting authority for anything outside of the borough. So if they don't have their own platting authority, then that means the survey section becomes the platting authority. We have the program support and IT. We have they do our public records requests. So we get a lot of those that come in from the public for information on some of our records and cases. They also do any of our regulation development. They help us with any legislative requests that we might get from all of you. And they are also helping us manage some of our larger projects.
Rep. Armstrong, please.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for your presentation. Would you be able to give us a brief overview of understanding about how your work intersects with the Department of Environmental Conservation or other departments doing work that overlaps?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Armstrong. So we work closely with DEC, Fish and Game, and probably DOT would be the three agencies that we work the most with. DOT we intersect with on lands that they might want to put a road in an area. And so we work with them on kind of doing a management agreement or kind of a swap of who's going to manage that area for those purposes. They also have surveyors within DOT. So we're the two groups that have surveyors is DOT and then DMLW. DEC, we work with on different things such as later in the presentation I have about our statewide abatement of impaired lands under our chief of operations, section chief. They represent the landowner, so the state of Alaska, for a spill or contamination. But DEC is the regulator. So they might have certain standards for cleanup that they work with our team to make sure that those we're going to represent the state's interest, to ensure that those lands can be put back into the public interest and the public use. Fish and game, we might work with on cabins or access issues. If there's an access issue, let's say, to get to a lake that they normally stock, that's something that we'll try to work with them on to ensure that they have that access.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. So then we also have under that team our public access assertion and defense. I refer to them as our PAD section. They're helping the governor right now a lot with the Unlocking Alaska initiative. So if you've been hearing about how we're trying to push back on the federal government on some of the overreach that they have for our water bodies and being able to make sure that we have navigability, we have the rights to those navigable waters because we got those at statehood. So that's what they do, as well as RS-2477 work that they make sure that those are defended. We have our realty services section. Our realty services section takes in title. They do title reports. So before we can actually convey land out or bring land in, we have to have title reports done. They also are in charge of our state entitlement. So I'm going to go into that in further detail later on in the presentation. But our entitlement that we have left with the federal government, they ensure that we're bringing that in, making sure that we also are checking to see that the federal government is giving us proper amount of acreage credit, not taking too much of our entitlement for like meandering out water bodies. And then under the chief of operations, we have more of our sections that do land authorizations. So we have our land conveyances section where they do non-competitive and competitive sales. Our competitive sales are our land auction sales, so you might hear about those for subdivisions, as well as remote recreational staking program, and then and also over-the-counter sales. So anything that doesn't sell in our subdivision auction would go to over-the-counter. They also deal with anything non-competitive, such as preference rights. So if somebody has been has a lease somewhere for a really long time, they have a right to request from the state to purchase that land. And so they do those preference rights as well as native allotments decisions. We work with BLM on any of those native allotments that maybe have come to the state that we need to convey back to BLM so they can then convey it to that allottee and any other non-competitive such as land exchanges.
Rep. Sadler.
Thank you, the Chair. Christy, Director Cogullis. We heard a presentation on a bill, University of Alaska Lands Bill for Land Conveyances. Is DMLW the section that we would deal with as we considered that bill? Just want to make sure for members understanding who we might be talking to. Is that who would we talk to about the lands bill?
Great, yes. Through the Chair, Representative Sadler. Yes, that will be the Division of Mine and Water, and I do have a little more detail on that as well. We are actively working with the university in reviewing their selections, and that would be our Realty Services section specifically that will work with them.
Okay. Okay, please continue.
Okay, and then we have our regional land offices. So they are located in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. They do any of our authorizations. I think a lot of times people just refer to what we do as permits, but we do permits, easements, leases, material sales out of those offices. So there's quite a few different types of authorizations that they handle, as well as a lot of our stewardship pieces. So if there's a trespass, some sort of maybe somebody has dumped a lot of trash on state land, this is the group that typically deals with those. Our contract initiation, revenue, and recovery team, they work really closely with our land conveyances and regional land offices to do contracts. So if you do purchase land from the state through an auction, you can get a contract. and you can actually pay the state back through that contract. So we act as the bank. And so our contract initiation section is the one that puts that together for those people. They also bring in any revenue that we're trying to recover, maybe due to default or non-payment. This group is also in charge currently of doing our scanning project that we received money for last year as part of a backlog project. So they've made some serious strides in getting close to 3,000 files scanned into the system. Last but not least, we have our statewide abatement of impaired lands, which I did touch on briefly. They deal with, like I said, representing the state of Alaska and the landowner's interest in contamination, spills, and also any of our abandoned derelict vessels that are located across the state. This is the team that works on making sure that they get in contact with the owner and hopefully getting that resolved without leaving those vessels on state land for too long. All right, so the state entitlement and selection conveyance process. I was going to go over this just to have an understanding of how this has all occurred over the last bit of time. So the state is not the only one that is waiting for land entitlement from the federal government. There's a hierarchy in which it actually gets processed by the feds. So BLM has completed conveyance of all of the homesteads. There are several hundred 1906 Native Allotment Act parcels that have yet to be resolved. And there's currently about 1,700 eligible Native veterans under the Dingell Act. So that is, I don't know if any of you have heard about the Dingell Act, but that is basically allowing a lot of our Native veterans from the Vietnam War to actually come back and get lands that are owed to them. So as of November of 2022, BLM has an estimate that there's about 1,700 eligible applicants and about 253 applications for allotments have been received thus far. They can apply for state-selected lands, but the state does have to relinquish our selection on that land before it can go to that veteran. And then we also have the Alaska Native corporations that are waiting on their lands, and they've selected and ranked them as required under the 2003 Alaska Land Transfer Acceleration Act, referred to this as ALTA. ANCSA is over selections have been relinquished by operation law under ALTA, and BLM is currently working on ANCSA conveyances in the Chulista and Otna regions. So the state continues to periodically reprioritize our remaining selections and top filings as permitted under ALTA. And ALTA requires selections to total no more than 125 of remaining land. But right now the state is over-selected by about 250%. So we are working with BLM to maybe reduce some of our selections. We have them prioritized 1 through 4, 1 being the highest priority, 4 being the lowest. And at this point, we're talking about potentially relinquishing any of those 3s and 4s, but we do go through a public process for that. So the process, we actually had to select everything by September 30th of 1994. That was our deadline, and those were actually newspaper noticed by 1995. The state does request the conveyance of high priority lands, and the conveyance requests are usually for selected lands, but we can also do top filing, which means if there's maybe a public land order on the land, which means that it's not vacant, unappropriated, unreserved land, we can put a top file on it. So if that is lifted, then our actual selection then sets down on that land. And we do have some really important areas where we have some top filings that we would want to keep and bring into state ownership. So then once it actually goes to BLM, they adjudicate the selection and issue a decision that is appealable. The BLM adjudication includes verifying different use and occupancies. And they want to see, too, if they need to have any kind of reservations on that patent that they're going to give to the state. BLM then issues us a tentative approval for any unsurveyed lands. And most of the lands we're looking at are not going to be surveyed. So they'll issue us a tentative approval, which by then we can actually do almost anything with the land. It's just not quite surveyed and we don't have a patent. It does take quite a bit of time for surveys to occur just because they don't have a lot of funding for surveying. And of course, with the other competitive, different land requests, such as the Dingell Act, some of those funds are being pushed over to get those lands surveyed.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Collis. Two questions, actually. First, regarding the surveying, does the prevalence now of unmanned aerial vehicles / drones, and does that provide any possible ways to do surveying at less cost with this required precision? And I'll a follow-up question, if I may.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. You know, I know we're using a lot of LIDAR technology and a lot of drones to help us with the with surveying here in the state. I'm not 100% sure what BLM is doing to try to improve their surveying, but I do know that the state is making great strides in trying to implement a new system across the state that's going to help us. It's called ACORN. I don't have a lot of good details on that one to provide at the moment, but that is a system that I think is going to help across the state any surveyors that are going out to survey state land. It's going to give them real-time data, and it's going to help them with not having it to be as tedious and long as it maybe previously was.
Thank you. And a follow-up question on a slightly different subject through the chair. I know that the issue of land selection is sometimes presented and interpreted as those darn feds have not yet given us all we were entitled to at state bid. Is that a fair interpretation of the system, or are there benefits that the state obtains by not having finished off its selection process? Is it to the state's benefit to hurry up and get this done, or is there some advantage to playing the delay?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would say that we really would like to bring in all of our entitlement. The reason I think that we haven't is there is some lands up in the Dalton Highway area that has a specific public land order, 5150, that the federal government is looking to potentially lift. I mean, we've been in discussions with them for years. We're not 100% sure, obviously, if they're going to actually lift that public land order, but if we could get that kind of in our, if we bring that into state entitlement, into our ownership, that would really help, I think, kind of move things along, because we have quite a bit of acreage in that area that we really are wanting to bring in.
So in essence, to follow up, so mm-hmm. the public land order withdraws land, it deprives the state of the ability to put our hands on that. So the federal government may in fact release some land we really want, which is kind of why we're not finishing off the entire process. We're kind of waiting to maybe see if this really juicy land is available. Is that fair?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is fair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Sadler. Director Collis, I have just one quick question. Yesterday I was visiting with a constituent, and she used the term patent with regard to land, and I was just kind of like, is that the same as title, or maybe you could define that a little better for me?
Chair McKay, yes. So patent is what we get at the end. So once you actually receive, you have everything finalized, you have the survey, a final patent is that document that kind of outlines exactly the legal description of those lands, any reservations that might have been held back on that land. And that is the final step that we receive from BLM after they TA those, after they TA the lands and survey the lands, is for us to get a patent on the lands. And it does take us some time with the patent, just because if, like I said, they try to not meander out water bodies that we already own, we will go back and forth with them to say, no, this cannot count against our entitlement.
Okay, thank you.
So this chart shows what we have left for entitlement and the different types of grants that we received in the Statehood Act. So right now we have a total of $4.8 million basically left. I did show on this graph, you can see the University of Alaska, it would come out of our general grant selection land, which would leave us at about 4,588,843 acres. We do have a couple other pots besides just general grant land left with the statehood 6A. It's a different type of land that we can bring in that we have left of 229,000. We're looking at this one closely because there are some areas that we're really interested in on how we can bring in some more lands that would be of value in southeast or other areas.
Okay, thank you.
So this goes into more detail about the University of Alaska's recently passed bill that the federal government is going to give them an additional 360,000 acres of land for the university. And I know you just recently heard from the university. Director Stolpe was here and Chad Hutchinson from the university. We are, like I said, working with them. They need to get up to 500,000 acres of land, and we do need to agree with them. So we're working with them. We're doing public notice of these lands. So they have submitted 200,000 acres to us, and we've already agency noticed 100,000 acres. We are meeting with agencies just so they can understand what this really means, that this is us giving up our selection of these lands. They will be used differently by the university than they would be used by the state. And so we want to make sure that we know all the facts before we decide to conditionally relinquish to the federal government. And the reason they have so much land with the 500,000 is similar to what I was saying about once you actually meander out water bodies and take those out of the actual land entitlement, then it's going to they're going to need more land potentially to bring in to get to the 360,000 acres.
And Rep. Sadler, please.
Mr. Chair, the term of art, Director Collis, what does meander out mean? What's the implication?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. So basically they need to take out the fact that this land is not being conveyed to the university. So they need to recognize, just like if it was, let's say, private land, they need to pull that piece out and not count that as part of the lands that they would be conveying to universities. So if there's a water body that the state would claim ownership to based off of its size and navigability, then that would need to be taken out of that patent to the university.
Okay. Thank you.
And so there are some deadlines that we're working through, but we are working closely with the university to try to find some good solutions on what they can bring into their own portfolio. All right, so we're going to switch over to our mining section on a bit of a deeper dive. Within our mining section, we have 32 staff, and they're also located in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. They're organized by units. So first we have our mineral property management. So that would be kind of step one, and anyone that's interested in developing a mine, they would do a mining claim. They would stake their mining claim, and that would be for mining, exploration, and development. And then they also manage within this group 87 offshore and 48 mining leases. So, and I don't know if I pointed out that they manage over 41,000 mining claims. So that's a lot of work that the staff does. This is early exploration. Next step in the process for mine development would be to apply with the APMA group is what we call them, but that stands for Application for Permits to Mine in Alaska. This is where your more advanced exploration of a mine. They have 643 APMAs right now issued for hard rock exploration and placer mining. They also do any of the approvals for the plan of operations for our upland, offshore, and mill site leases. Next step, move into large mines. That's when somebody wants to go in and they've got a good prospect. They want to develop a mine. This is the group that oversees the statewide reclamation requirements for all large mines, and they oversee large mines on state land. So that's kind of the three groups that work on any of the mining claims all the way to a large mine development for any of our hard rock mineral metal type. Then we also have the coal permitting and compliance. They do everything from A to Z when it comes to coal permitting and compliance. There's 36 coal leases across the state, but only one active operating one, Usabelli, which I'll show you in a further slide in my presentation. We also have our abandoned mine lands, which I briefly touched on earlier. They regulate the reclamation and removal of hazards from past mining operations. So they get money a lot of times from the federal government to help remove a lot of these hazards from state lands. All right, so this represents all of the mines across the state that are either operating, permitted, or in exploration phase. I should say permitting phase, not permitted. Operating right now, we have 8 large mines. Seven of those are metal mines, and one is coal. Fort Knox slash Gill is actually two separate ones, but they're located very close to one another. And then we also have, for permitting, we have Donlin, Pebble, and Manh Choh. And then exploration, we have, what do we have, like, eight in exploration phase. I think if I'm counting that right, seven, actually, it looks like. So that's kind of an overview of the different large mine projects we have occurring here in the state.
Okay. Rep. Armstrong has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. This might be a big question.
Okay.
And so it can be through follow-up, but I'm really interested to learn about what timeline looks like on some of these, if there's any, like, potential revenue numbers on any of these projects. I know permitting can be a short or long process, and if that exists on the spectrum, how many are close to being operating? Anything like that would be really useful for me. Thank you.
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, do you have kind of a write-up that I could provide? I was debating on if I wanted to go through each one of them, but that could take quite a bit of time unless you were interested. There's a lot of facts that we could provide on this that I could provide to the committee if that would be helpful.
Yes, thank you.
I'll make sure I do that.
Okay, Rep. Sadler has a question.
Thank you, and this is also a large question through the chair, Director Collis. I've seen this chart for years, and we have less than a dozen, you know, eight, nine operating mines and some good prospects, but Alaska, you frequently hear described as America's mineral treasure chest, and we're the largest state in the union. Why are there, in my value adjustment, so few operating mines in Alaska? What's the problem?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. You know, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that question. I mean, let's let the commissioner.
Representative Sadler, through the chair. This is John Boyle, commissioner designee, for the record. You know, the general reason behind a lot of that is the same reason why we don't have a lot of other projects, is it really comes down to infrastructure. You know, the economics to support, you know, a large development that's far removed from infrastructure is, you know, you need a lot of minerals to support, you know, building a road, providing, you know, power for the mine, you know, doing all the necessary things that you need to do in order to actually develop the resource. So, as you know, you notice a lot of the bigger mining prospects are areas that are located, you know, quite a ways from infrastructure. Pebble, Donlin, you know, the area in the Brooks Range along Ambler Road, you know, those areas are quite a bit attenuated from, you know, electrical transmission lines or natural gas sources, things of that nature. So, you know, the economics to actually develop mines are incredibly challenged, which is why, you know, some of the mines that we see moving forward, like Manh Choh, you know, those are closer to infrastructure. So, you know, it significantly impacts the economics to make it profitable for folks to, you know, operate mines. And then on top of that, of course, there's significant permitting and regulatory uncertainty. You know, when these mining projects, you know, we can point to Pebble, even when they're located on state land, there's a number of federal authorizations that need to occur. And as we saw with Pebble, you know, the EPA chose to exercise one element of its authority to issue this peremptory veto for the mine. And so, of course, you know, now that project is, you know, mired then in additional uncertainty until, you know, maybe the courts want to weigh in on it. So you factor all of that together, and it's going to be, you know, very few, very rare prospects that actually have the opportunity to move forward to development. Because you sort of need that alignment of the stars of having access to infrastructure, you know, having a stable and predictable permitting environment, and then of course just having the actual resources in the ground that merit, you know, making that size of an investment.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions? Rep. Armstrong.
Oh, sir. Thank you, through the chair. One more question for you around exploration. I'm curious, as you know, minerals are needed for so much renewable technology. Have you seen an interest in exploration in Alaska, given the greater interest in the need for minerals for electric vehicles and solar panels and other technology like that.
Sure, Representative Armstrong, through the chair, you know, we have. And, you know, another division within DNR, our Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, actually employs, you know, a team of geologists that every year go out and conduct what we call minerals mapping, which doesn't sound like a lot, because when you hear that term, you think of people maybe just sort of drawing a map, but they actually go out in the field for months at a time. You know, they're transporting portable drill rigs that can drill down into, you know, mountains or hills, rock formations, and retrieve core samples, which help them to, you know, analyze and evaluate what the mineral potential is in a given region. So this is work that the state conducts. Of course, you know, private companies also go out and conduct that kind of work as well. But, you know, similar to what Representative Sadler asked earlier, a lot of our highest potential mineral areas, like in the Ambler Mining District, that contain a number of, you know, rare earths and critical minerals, are far removed from infrastructure, would require, you know, building a road, other things like that. And so, you know, a number of those projects are mired in uncertainty. Pebble is one of the biggest copper deposits in the world that's known. Obviously, also copper's a critical mineral, both for the manufacture of electric vehicles, but also for building out the grid and other components necessary to support, you know, the energy transition. And obviously, you know, we're aware of the challenges there. So, you know, yes, Alaska has a lot of minerals, but, you know, those minerals have to be developed and mines have to be built. And of course, you know, that evokes a lot of emotion sometimes from surrounding communities and things of that nature. So we can find the minerals, we have the minerals, but then we have to have, you know, the will, the social license in order to mine those minerals and to build the infrastructure necessary in order to actually, you know, make those work for the state.
Thank you.
Representative Dybert, you had a question.
I do. Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner Boyle, or thank you, Director Collins, for your presentation. I have a question. I'm a representative near Fairbanks, Alaska, so a lot of my constituents have reached out to me regarding the Manh Choh. It's the yellow triangle mm-hmm. up there in the interior. I guess my question can you direct me to more reading on this and the process, so that I could help answer questions from constituents on where you're at with Manh Choh? I don't know if you have.
Yes. For the record, this is Christy Collis, Director for the Division of Mine, Land, and Water. Through the chair, Representative Dybert, yes, we can definitely give you a more information. When I send the information to Representative Armstrong and to this committee to respond to her question earlier on all those different processes, we could give you a lot more detail on Manh Choh. I'll have them focus on that. We have a group, the Office of Project and Permitting Management, that deals with a lot of the oversight and management of the different permits needed for these different operations. So I can have them help give something to the committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, please continue.
All right. So this does go into more detail of kind of what we have here in Alaska. This was a slide that was presented to me from our Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. I do have somebody on the line that has a lot more information when it comes to questions you might have in relation to this slide. But I can tell you that we do have 7 metal mines producing gold and base metals and the 1 coal mine, as we showed earlier, and about 140 placer gold mines and at least 32 active early through advanced stage exploration projects. So there is a lot of projects happening right now. It's just a matter of, as Commissioner Boyle stated, trying to get the infrastructure and trying to make sure that it's viable for these companies. Total production in 2022 in Alaska's mines is estimated at about 700,000 ounces of gold, 16.6 million ounces of silver, and 620,000 tons of zinc, and 180 or 108,000 tons of lead. Zinc and gold are close rivals for the honor of being Alaska's most valuable mineral commodity. Zinc, lead, silver, and coal production have been relatively steady over the past decade. Gold production, which exceeded 1 million ounces in 2013, has climbed back towards 700,000 ounces per year and is expected to trend upward as Pogo rebuilds its production. Exploration spending has been steadily increasing over the last 5 years, and since 2020, Alaska has seen a major surge in exploration for gold. I do want to point out there's a slight correction that I would like to note for the record on this slide. For the production, the numbers should be in tons, not metric tons. And for Usabelli, their numbers are another 100,000 on top of the 925,000 that's on this slide. So they're over a million.
Okay, so I have a question, Director Collis. You may not know, but so we produce all this, all these minerals. I presume it's state land?
Not always state
land. Not always?
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess how much, what's the total value of all that extraction? Like in 2022, you know, $1 billion, $2 billion, whatever, and how much of that would go to the state of Alaska?
Chairman McKay, that's a good question. I know that we do have 3% of royalties that we do bring in from the state, and I think I believe I have a fact here from the mining section chief on how much I know they bring in for their claims for the work. It's over $11 million, but I could call on Steve Buckley, who's online right now, that could maybe answer that better.
Okay, Mr. Buckley, can you hear us? Probably muted. Mr. Steve Buckley, can you hear us?
Yes, for the record, my name is Steve Buckley, Mining Section Chief, Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining and Land and Water. If I, through the chair, the question was, what kind of royalties are we getting from various minerals on state land?
Yeah, that's correct. If you, you know, we're looking at a slide that tells us that there's a large amount of material being removed, and I was just curious, like in 2022, what was the total value of that material, and how much of that value would go to the state treasury? Just kind of want to get an idea of how mining stacks up against our other resource extraction industries.
Through the chair, the a good example is it's about $800,000 in royalties go to the state from our hard rock mines. Main reason is that most of our mines, like Red Dog, Fort Knox Red Dog is on tribal land or private land, Nana land. Fort Knox is on mental health trust. That's over $1.5 million goes to that outfit, and then Kensington and Greens Creek, of course, are on federal land. So,
okay.
As far as metal mining, not much in the way of royalties, but in the way of coal mining, it's over. I have that number here. More like 20 million per year.
Okay, very good. Just trying to get an idea. Okay, thank you, Mr. Buckley. Rep. Armstrong.
Given that information, I'm curious, looking at the previous slide, if there's a map where we can see permitting, exploration, and operating that is on state land to kind of understand how that 800,000 is connected and knowing, I don't know, does all this permitting, exploration on state land or does it cover everything?
Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, it covers everything, so it's not just state land. You know, Pebble is one of the largest ones that's on state land, but a lot of these other ones are kind of a mixture. Some of the exploration is occurring on some state lands, but not all of them. So, yeah, that is a map that I could definitely check into seeing if we can develop for you.
Yeah, and if you don't have it, even just I know you're going to send individual maybe fact sheets on some of these. If it's a way to just notate clearly at the top, like this is state land or it isn't, that'd be really helpful.
Through the chair, Representative Armstrong, we'll make sure we do that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Please continue, Director.
So I'm going to go into a little more detail on two particular projects that have access roads. We have the West Susitna Mining Project area. As you can see, there's multiple different areas that have exploration occurring. Most of them are for our hard rock metal mines, and then we have the one lease for the coal. These are all still in exploration phase. And the road itself is about a 100-mile road that's out of the Matsu Borough. It's Alaska Industrial, and ADA is the corporation, which is Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, that would be doing the road. So they're the ones that are advocating, kind of turning in all the applications. I know that they are working right now on the 404 permit with the federal government to try to get this authorized. With that initial with NEPA is going to have to be a factor. So once again, this is part of the problem of getting some of these projects online, is that we do have to go through all of the federal processes. And a lot of times we do that prior to going through the state process. They will need to get authorizations from the Matsu Borough as well as through DMLW to have the road developed. But at this point, we haven't received an application because they're still in kind of the early phases.
Representative Wright.
So you said it takes a little. Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So you said it takes a little bit of time. How long does it usually take for that process to get programs online?
Through the chair, Representative Wright. You know, it can really vary depending on the federal government and how much back and forth there is. But for the actual road project, I'd kind of be guessing at this point to say, but I know that the NEPA process itself takes at least a couple years for them to go through. And on my next slide, I have Ambler as the next project area that we have an access road that needs to get out to the resource. And that one, the feds have actually pulled back their record of decision based off of some pushback that they were receiving. So that one has been in the works for, I'd say, almost a decade, trying to get through that process. So we are, for the Ambler Road, the state is working through the easement application, even though the feds are looking back at their record of decision and deciding whether or not they're going to make any changes.
Thank you.
Okay, Rep. Sadler.
Thank you. Actually, through the chair to both the DNR folks here. So you'll notice on this map, I believe the legend indicates that much of the mining potential areas out in the West Sioux access area are indeed state-owned land. Is that correct, first?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I don't have that 100% in front of me, but I. You're right. Based off of the land status here, yes.
And that's exciting because as the Commissioner Designee said, roads and infrastructure are a critical element to obtaining access to our mineral resources. And the road access, I believe you said, Christy, we have to have 404 permits from the federal government?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is correct.
You're going with this? And we just recently heard the federal government exercise its 404 permitting authority preemptively to stop development in the Pebble region. Is it fair to say that the Ambler Road, the West Susitna project, is at the same risk of peremptory refusal of permits from the EPA under 404 as has happened to Pebble?
To the chair, Representative Sadler, I think that would be the concern the state has. And my understanding, the state is going to be pushing back on the federal government for the recent decision on Pebble Mine, because as we continue to try to develop our resources, the federal government making those types of decisions really hinders our ability to move forward.
Thank you.
And to add to that, Representative Sadler, through the chair, this is John Boyle, Commissioner Designee for the record. You know, it is the reason why the state is pushing back on the Pebble decision. You know, whether or not that's the right mine for the right area is a debate, you know, that has merit. However, the fact that EPA, you know, exercised that particular authority in a manner which, in our perspective, is arbitrary and capricious, I think raises a lot of concerns, because there is no criteria, there's no framework, there's no mechanism of law which would, you know, keep EPA from continuing to exercise that authority on West Susitna, on Ambler, on a new oil field development on the North Slope, on an access road through the Tongass, you know, so on and so forth. So the precedent here is what is, you know, troubling to the state.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rep. Sadler.
And I'm going to say this is not so much a question as a statement for the record. I believe the federal government's recent expansion of the definition of the waters of the United States broadens the potential applicability of the 404 marine prospect immensely, and commensurately the prospect for, I'll call, mischief on the federal government's part.
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Rep. Sadler and Commissioner Boyle. And just so we make sure that we keep Representative Sadler completely full of information, we're going to have ADEC DEC here to talk to us about 404s on February 13th. Okay, please continue.
So this is a slide on the Ambler Mining District. As you can see, there's a lot of potential here for metals in the area. We have issued exploration permits for these different projects in the Ambler area. And then we have a large area, as you can see, that has a lot of potential along the route for minerals and metals. So the Ambler Road, like I stated, is already going through the process. They've gone through the long, tedious process with the federal government, and they're still battling to try to get an actual authorization from the federal government. We are working through the process for adjudication for the road. We went through a public process. We are taking in all of those public comments on whether an easement is appropriate on state lands. A final decision on that we're hoping will come out in the next few months on whether or not and what kind of mitigation measures, if any, if it is decided that is in the best interest of the state to issue an access easement for that area. And this is about a 211-mile road from the Dalton Highway. And this is also the area I was speaking on when I mentioned selections and some of the public land orders that are in place. The Dalton Highway is one of the areas where they've got the public land order that we have state selections and top filings.
So one quick question, Director. The West Susitna Road and the Ambler Mining Road, would they both be public roads if they were to be built? Could I go in there and drive all over the place?
Chair McKay, at this point, the Ambler Road is proposed as a private industrial road, so that one is not going to be for public access as proposed. There will be crossings that we're looking at. If this is to be decided that it is the best interest, there'll be crossings. That's something that the federal government had required, is that there's crossing at certain points to make sure that people can still traverse the land. But the West Sioux Road, from what we understand, we haven't received an application yet, but we understand that one be a public road.
That's what I've been told as well. So, okay, any other questions? I think, are you at the close?
I am. Director? Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Got one.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I just had one quick question about the progress you made on the cemetery in Fairbanks. Could you just talk about it really briefly? It doesn't have to be very detailed. I just want to know the status.
Through the chair, Representative Wright. So that is a Department of Military and Veteran Affairs project. The progress that we've made from the division side is with our realty section. They helped to acquire the parcel from a private property owner. So we do now have that parcel in state ownership. We did do a lot of due diligence to ensure that that parcel was going to meet the requirements for building a cemetery at that location. So we feel pretty confident, barring any other issues, that will be where the final cemetery will occur. And of course, DMVA can give you more details on next steps.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although we are not yet at the financial aspect of our discussions on DNR, it's no secret that we're going to be having the financials. Finance Committee Subcommittee will be us. And so I'm going to just ask a leading question, and you might come back with more information, but you've described DMLW's mission. Does your division have the staff and financial resources necessary to accomplish all its mission? Or if there's any deficiencies, please outline them.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, Thank you for that question. You know, we are really working hard to find efficiencies within the division to make sure that we can actually manage all of our programs. We're finding creative ways to try to keep people. I think sometimes having more people is not the answer. It can be that you keep the competent people in place and you keep them happy and working because you build that continuity and that knowledge base. And so we're doing flex positions within our division, trying to let people become subject matter experts and then move up the ladder without having to switch jobs. And so we're really trying to find new ways to encourage people to stay with the Division of Miami Land and Water to do the great work for the state of Alaska.
Okay, thank you, Director. If there's no other questions, then thank you for your presentation. I'm excited about the mineral potential that we have here in Alaska, and I think that Representative Armstrong is spot on that the energy transition to a lot of the renewable sources will require a tremendous amount of mining and minerals. I'd like to thank you for your presentation. And in closing, if there's any other business, seeing none, the next committee meeting will be held at 1 o'clock on Monday, February 6th, when we will hear from the Department of Natural Resources about Cook Inlet gas supply. Meeting is adjourned at 1:57 p.m. Thank you.